Hey everybody, welcome into Redacted on this October 8th.
It's July, honey.
I know, it's July. welcome into on this special edition of Redacted. We're back from vacation and can't even know what the months are. Nice to see all of you. Welcome in. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris. A little rusty there, shall I take it?
Well, I was just thinking, sadly, about October 7th, and we were just talking about that a moment
ago.
And
the October surprise that we are getting in July, yeah. Which comes around the election and the actual candidate for president. Yes, there's a lot of news that we've missed. Thank you for following along with us as we've been on break. We took 2 weeks off, but we're back in a new studio.
Yeah.
Dick's new location. We're glad to be back with you.
So we've got a lot of news to get to on your July 8th that we're going to be covering today. We're going to be talking about this coup plan for President Biden. Democrats over the weekend lining up a massive kind of army of not only the corporate media, but also donors, top donors, Democratic House members, Democratic senators, all in an effort to overthrow President Biden, asking him to leave office. We're going to dive deep on that today with some of the latest revelations here just a few minutes ago, actually.
Plus, we're going to talk about a new BRICS currency and how that is, in fact, hurting the American economy. Anyone with a brain would know that. So why do politicians keep sanctioning other countries and removing ourselves from the global economy? Why? That's the question. Why?
I don't know. And we're also going to talk about the October 7th. The actual date, October 7th, and some new revelations from an Israeli newspaper confirming what we've been reporting here for many, many months here on the show about the civilian deaths on that day. We will talk about that.
Plus, a new gender toolkit was written for liberals so that they are given the words to discuss the fact that transgender medicine is harmful for kids. So is transitioning children. Liberals are like, wait a minute. We thought that was a conservative talking point, but actually that's hurting children. How do we talk about that now? Because we've been preventing from talking about that. Well, a new liberal group launched a toolkit so that they can
help
discuss
out
this very thing. Yeah,
that's great.
Without name calling, all of that and more today. Redacted. We're back.
Are we're
you
back.
Ready? Do you
I'm
need
ready.
A stretch?
No, I was so excited to get back. I mean, there's been so many things happening that it's just been so frustrating to not be able to talk about it, you know, not
right.
to be able to have a conversation
about
it. Oh my
gosh, you guys should have seen us when Julian Assange was free. I was following his flight as if I was in Mission Control, all
right.
of this stuff. It's like been a big news cycle that we've removed ourselves from.
I know, it's been crazy. So good to have all of you here. We're going to dive into the news. We're going to talk about this latest with President Biden and this coup attempt that's unfolding right now in Washington, D.C., crap is hitting the fan as we speak. But first, our show today brought to you by our friends at 1775 Coffee. On a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you hate crappy coffee? I, for one, really hate crappy coffee. We just got a new coffee maker, actually. And, you know, it's no more of that crappy coffee. To be able to have fantastic beans, and that is what our friends at 1775 Coffee will do. The world awakened to a new era in 1775, and now 1775 Coffee is bringing you a coffee that embodies that revolutionary spirit, crafted with passion and precision. Our beans are ethically and exclusively sourced from the finest coffee beans and coffee farms of Bolivia. 1775 Coffee Farm to Cup Journey ensures the highest quality, authenticity, and sustainability from start to finish. With each sip, your palate will recognize, appreciate the dedication and passion that goes into crafting this single-sourced brew. Right now, you get 10% off of your 1775 coffee by going to 1775coffee.com/redacted. Use the code redacted for 10% off checkout of your first order. All right. I think everything is good to go. David, Philip, everything good to go in our new digs, on our new studio, new sound, everything coming together.
Check
okay.
One, check two.
One,
yeah,
two.
Kind of,
check.
We're kind
okay.
of, kind of,
go,
I mean,
so
you know,
right.
Yeah. We're working hard
wave.
In the background too. So if things look a bit janky, it's cause it's on us. We, so.
All right. Okay. Well, we're tweaking. Yeah. Still tweaking everything. Just want to make sure I'm hearing Natalie's audio. Just want to make sure I'm hearing her through my headset, but okay, I got to.
Yes, I was told to move this closer, okay?
Yes, that would help. So
all right, for my solo later, how is this, everybody, better?
Better, okay, we'll tweak okay. all that later. Okay, well, let's get to some serious stuff right now, some serious stuff about to hit the fan in Washington, D.C. Those aren't my words, those are the words of Democrats who are saying the S, yes, the shit is about to hit the fan on Monday when Congress returns today. A House Democrat told Axios people are scared about their own races right now because of President Biden. They're also worried about the country and the democracy, end quote. A Democratic coup is unfolding. Could we see a Democratic revolt trying to throw Biden out? Something we predicted weeks ago right here on Redacted. I think many of you will probably remember that episode where we deep dived all of the pieces of this coup that was unfolding right before our eyes. Democrats looking to throw Joe Biden out ahead of the 2024 election. It's not an overstatement when I say that Democrats are in revolt. They're not just a party divided over policy. They're a party in open rebellion against their own leader right now, their demented president, Joe Biden. A coup, just imagine for a second what this would look like, a sitting president facing a mutiny from within his own party. I mean, a mainstream media, which is suddenly shocked to find that Corinne Jean-Pierre has been lying. A press secretary has been lying to us all along.
He is as sharp as ever, as I have known him to be in my engagement and my experience with him.
Oh, yeah. He's the sharpest he's ever been. As long as I've known him, you know, he's only gotten more sharp. Like 4 years ago, I thought he was sharp. He's even sharper now. So I guess mental regression, dementia, senility is favorable to Corinne Jean-Pierre. This isn't just some behind the scenes grumbling that's happening right now among Democrats. This is a full on coordinated coup attempt to dislodge the commander in chief. Just watch ABC's George Stephanopoulos. He spent 22 straight minutes grilling President Biden over his mental capacity.
I know your doctor said he consulted with a neurologist. I guess I'm asking a slightly different question. Have you had the specific cognitive tests, and have you had a neurologist, a specialist, do an examination?
No, no one said I had to. No one said they said I'm good.
Would you be willing to undergo an independent medical evaluation that included neurological and cognitive tests and release the results to the American people?
Look, I have a cognitive test every single day. Every day I have that test. Everything I do. You know, not only am I campaigning, but I'm running the world.
I'm running the world.
And I'm doing fine. Every day on this test, I mean, everyone thinks I'm failing, but I'm taking it every single day, right? And I don't understand no one said I had to. They said I'm fine. Who's they that said you're fine?
You have to realize, I mean, they're surrounded by sycophants,
right?
You're surrounded by people who are just telling you what you want to hear.
Mm-hmm.
So you're surrounded by yes men in this little enclosed bubble right now. And of course, reports are over the past 48 hours that Biden is being kept in such a cloistered environment right now. You know, Jill Biden is absolutely keeping him away from even other staff members who are openly in revolt and upset about it right now. So over the past 24 to 48 hours, we've seen a growing chorus of Democrats openly going on record calling for Biden to step down. Remember these names, folks. These are five of the House Democrats leading the coup right now. These are like people signing their name on the Declaration of Independence. You put your name on the Declaration of Independence and the king gets a hold of you. It's lights out for you. So they're putting their names right now on, you know, out there publicly admitting that they want Biden out of there. Here are Representatives Angie Craig from Minnesota, Representative Lloyd Dodgett from Texas, Arizona's Raul Gravella, Massachusetts' Seth Moulton, Illinois' Mike Quigley, all coming out publicly saying for the first time, Joe has to go. Here, just a look. Minnesota Representative Angie Craig says this is not a decision I come to lightly. There's simply too much at stake to risk a second Donald Trump presidency. I respectfully call on President Biden to step aside. It's the Democratic nominee for a second term as president. Allow for a new generation of leaders to step forward. Lloyd Dodgett says, I'm hopeful that he will make this painful and difficult decision to withdraw. I respectfully call on him to do so. Another one says, Arizona Representative Raul says, what he needs to do is shoulder the responsibility for keeping that seat. And part of that responsibility is get out of this race. And it goes on and on and on.
Well, MSNBC said that they're freaking out that this could cost them their own election. So I'm thinking about how that would work. Right. So I think that what they are afraid of is that their constituents see them lying to them, saying he's fine, this is fine. And that then says something about their judgment that they have done and that that could cost them their elections. I don't know. What do you think of that as a possibility?
Well, I mean, a lot of the individuals, of course, who ride the coattails of the person in charge, yes, often can tie their hopes and dreams to the leader of the party. Or you can sort of step aside and not tie your hopes and dreams to the leader of that of your party and try to run sort of an alternative path.
How would you do that as candidate?
Well, a lot of candidates have pulled this off in very like local elections. There's a template for this both among Republicans and Democrats. You pay attention to your local district. You talk about local issues. You don't talk about President Biden at all. You don't even bring up his name.
Right.
There were people that ran successfully that way when Donald Trump was down in the polls and people were picking on Donald Trump and he was seen by many Republicans as like a liability. Instead, you know what? I'm just going to run as the local person here in town. I'm going to run. I'm not going to mention Donald Trump's name.
Yeah.
I'm going to focus on local issues, and that's how you win a race. And the same thing is true with Democrats. They can run away from Biden in that way.
Yes.
Something I've been asking myself, though, all weekend long about this is, why now? Why are we seeing this now? Why the sudden urgency right now at this moment? Why are all the mainstream media right now on the same page? I find this part of the story the most fascinating. Front page of The Economist. Look, no way to run a country with a walker and the presidential seal, like The Economist, really? Talk about a liberal rag that's always in your corner.
Right.
I mean, they love Biden. What?
And they love the war in Ukraine.
They love the war in Ukraine. They love the green energy policies. They love globalist agenda. I mean, they love everything about Biden.
Yeah. How's the underside of that bus feel, President Biden?
But they're not alone. I mean, The Economist isn't alone. This isn't a vacuum. All of the liberal
media. Wall Street Journal, yes.
New York Times, to serve his country, President Biden should leave the race. This is the New York Times. Here's the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. It's time for Biden to pass the torch. Here's another one. Here's the New Yorker. The reckoning of Joe Biden. For the president to insist on remaining the Democratic candidate would be an act of not only self-delusion, but of national endangerment. Here's the Wall Street Journal. Democrats can't avoid the Biden problem. And then finally, here's the Boston Globe. You don't get more liberal than this. Why Biden should step aside for the good of the country. The president should graciously bow out of the race and free his delegates to cast their votes to someone else at the DNC. So
this is decidedly worse than Trump had it. And the media screamed themselves horse about Trump's competency. So yeah, this is the right question is, what's in it for them? Why are they doing this? It can't be out of honesty.
No, but I'm just curious how within a 48-hour period, all of these newspapers, all of them are suddenly on the same page. And all of these Democrats all on the same page at the same time. Well, it's a coordinated hit job by the deep state. This is exactly why it happened. You use the dismal debate performance against Donald Trump as cover. Work with CNN to show the world that he's got dementia. Make sure all of the Democrats are on the same page. That's the brilliance of using this strategy. We didn't think he was demented at all. And then, oh, wait a second. Did you see that CNN debate? Yeah, he's totally lost his mind. Sources are saying that Democrats are terrified that Biden, of course, can't take on Donald Trump in November. Clearly, the poll numbers suggest that's the case. They're shaking in their boots at the thought of another 4 years of President Trump. And instead of rallying behind a demented, senile president, they're looking for a revolt. What are they going to do? They need to find some sort of fresh blood. They know they can't win with him. And they're plotting, scheming, trying to force him out. But Biden is not budging. So he told ABC's George Stephanopoulos this weekend that an act of God will be the only thing to remove him. If only God will remove him.
Well, it's just reported in the last hour that Senator Mark Warner is assembling a group of senators together to try and convince you to stand down because they don't think you can win.
Well, Mark is a good man. We've never had that. He also tried to get the nomination too. Mark's not. Mark and I have a different perspective. I respect him.
And if Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries and Nancy Pelosi come down and say, we're worried that if you stay in the race, we're going to lose the House and the Senate, how will you respond?
I go into detail with them. I've spoken to all of them in detail, including Jim Clyburn, every one of them. They all said I should stay in the race. Stay in the race. No one said, none of the people said I should leave.
But if they do?
Well, it's like... They're not going to do that.
You sure?
Well,
right?
Are you sure?
Right. Only God himself will allow him to pull out of the race. He said that. He said, you know, I really, unless God himself asks me to leave, I mean, this is a man who can barely articulate his thoughts, is telling us that divine intervention is the only way he would step aside. But Biden has told us that democracy is on the ticket. He said repeatedly on the campaign trail that democracy is on the ticket in November. So then what is it? The will of the people or is it God? You can't have it both ways. Is it the will of the people that don't want you here based on poll numbers and your own constituents and your own members of Congress, your own party leaders, your own donors that don't want you? Or is it God?
Well, he does get to say, right, unless there is, like Slim Gnome in our chat says, a false flag coming in, something that would remove him without his own will.
Okay,
if so you know what I mean.
Yes, so let's talk about that, okay? Because this is what I'm fascinated by. This is, to me, the most interesting part of this story. I mean, we've been reporting on this for a couple of weeks or months now that this was going to happen, and people called us crazy.
Sure.
I love that. But I love being called crazy, and here we are. So how is all of this going to come together? And why are we seeing all of this drama right now? So the reason I think we're seeing all of this drama right now, all of this sort of theater, let's just call it theater because that's what it is. We knew that this was coming. We knew that they were lining up to try to have either a Gavin Newsom step in or Kamala Harris would take the reins, something like that. So we knew that this was coming. So why all of this drama, the theater, all of the mainstream media publications publishing almost on the same day that he needs to step aside? George Stephanopoulos doing this massive interview for 22 minutes won't let up on that one question about his mental competency. They weren't talking about Gaza. They didn't talk about anything else. They literally talked about his mental capacity for 22 minutes.
Right.
When has that happened before from George Stephanopoulos about a Democratic president? CNN. All over this, on debate night, slamming his performance. So all of this theater is, and then now we know that he's also just canceled a meeting with Democratic senators who were set to have a meeting with him today, and he canceled this meeting. So we'll get to that part in a second, but I think all of the theater that we're seeing right now, it's all coordinated by the deep state. It's all a plan. It's all a plan to say, use the CNN debate as this moment,
right?
Have all of this mainstream media coverage, have him be defiant for a few days. I'm staying in this race, God willing, I'm staying in this race. And then he steps aside for the good of the party, and he's the knight in shining armor. He steps aside. Like, it's all theater. I think
it does seem strange timing because it's a week lag from the debate.
Right.
Not much happened last week. So from a news cycle perspective,
4th of July,
we were off. Right. And I thought, oh, man, we really missed this story. Why is it coming in hot now? 8 days later,
Congress is coming back 4th of July.
I wonder if it's just going to be that the plan is he can act big and tough. Like, oh, I'm staying in it. I'm sticking in it. And then when they get to nominating, the Democrats come together to nominate their candidate, they don't nominate him.
Yeah.
Right.
That seems to me what's going to have to happen here is the DNC, Philip. You're right. Like, the Democratic National Convention will be the place where he steps aside. The Democrats come together, old school style, 100 years ago style, and they elevate someone who, oh, I didn't want to be the presidential nominee. I didn't want that at all.
Yeah.
I'm Grover Cleveland. I didn't have anything to do with, I don't want to be your nominee. And then you're suddenly the presidential nominee, Grover Cleveland style, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I think it's fascinating.
I didn't know that style.
That is the Grover Cleveland style. It's coming back. It's back in fashion. So of course it's total lunacy right now. And he's doubling down on this idea that he's not getting out. So this morning, rather than appear on camera reading his notes, because that's exactly what he's doing when he's on these phone calls, he's on a phone call, so he doesn't have to be seen reading notes. He called into Morning Joe and read off some pre-prepared cue cards. Listen.
The bottom line here is that we're not going anywhere. I am not going anywhere. I wouldn't be running if I didn't absolutely believe that I am the best candidate to beat Donald Trump in 2024. We had a Democratic nominating process where the voters spoke clearly. I won 14 right. million of those votes, et cetera. So I not only believe that from the beginning, but I wanted to reassert and demonstrate that it's true. And I'm going to be doing that all through this week and from here on.
So he's going to read.
No, that's AI Biden. I'm sorry. I watched the Instagram where the new prime minister of England was receiving a call from Joe Biden.
Yeah.
I'm not buying these audios. No, I'm not. It's too much like, it sounds like a Howard Stern impersonator. I'm sorry. I can't.
I love that Natalie has now gone off the AI deep end. Yes.
It's deepfake Biden. I don't know. I sent it to our redacted chat yesterday. Nobody rang in with
What do you
vote.
Guys think? I mean, do you guys think that that's real? I mean, I think it's likely real. He's just sitting there reading off of notes. And these are like sort of pre-prepared questions. I mean, he's received a whole host of pre-prepared questions from radio hosts
yes,
recently.
Yes, there was a radio host in Philadelphia who was fired for that.
Right. So I think by doing it as a phone call,
yeah.
that you know his staff is all around him on a speakerphone.
You think that
they
sounds
can,
real?
They can hand him the cue card that he has to respond to. Like they've got Corinne Jean-Pierre's folder of notes.
Sure.
So Morning Joe asks a question. They get a note right out of their little binder and they just hand it to him.
Okay, I'm going with deepfake.
All right, I can't believe I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt right now, but I think it's real. So of course this is total lunacy. He also sent out a tweet this morning, which tell me if you think he actually wrote his own tweet. This morning I sent a letter to my fellow Democrats on Capitol Hill. In it, I shared my thoughts about this moment in our campaign. It's time to come together, move forward as a unified party, and defeat Donald Trump. There's no way he knows how to use a comma correctly. There's no way. And then he sends out this massive letter that he wrote. Of course, he did not write that letter. No one believes that for a second. It's time to come together, move forward as a unified party and defeat Donald Trump. So stop saying that you want me out of here. And of course, this weekend, the Washington Post revealed the top Democratic senators called an emergency meeting with Biden for today. George Stephanopoulos confirmed that in this interview.
Post just reported in the last hour that Senator Mark Warner is assembling a group of senators together to try and convince you to stand down because they don't think you can win.
Well, Mark is a good man. We've never had that. He also tried to get the nomination, too. Mark and I have a different perspective. I respect him.
And if Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries and Nancy Pelosi come down and say, we're worried that if you stay in the race, we're going to lose the House and the Senate, how will you respond?
I go into detail with them. I've spoken to all of them in detail, including Jim Clyburn, every one of them. They all said I should stay in the race. Stay in the race. No one said, none of the people said, I should leave.
But if they do?
Well, it's like, they're not going to do that.
We're not going to do that. They're not going to do that. Yes, they did call a meeting. And now we know that he canceled the meeting this morning. So the president was set to meet with the Democratic senators, asking him to leave, and he canceled the meeting. Billionaire Bill Ackman says there's only two reasons to cancel such a meeting. One, that POTUS, President Biden, is not even willing to listen to calls for his stepping aside, or two, that the president has finally recognized that the time has come. I would bet on number two, he says. By canceling the meeting, he preserves his dignity in being better able to say it was his decision. So Democrats are terrified. Go ahead, dude.
I just want to point out one thing. It's like, it's funny how on Twitter or X, people are like, the media is being too hard on him. They're really pushing, like they've got this thing and they're being hard on Biden. But like, this is the journalism that we've been wanting. They should be talking to these people this way. All of these, every single politician should walk away from an interview and be like, that was tough. That was a tough interview. And so it's like they're finally doing their job.
And the media should wonder who's pulling the strings. If not him, mm-hmm. if he's like this, we should be asking not Jill Biden, not Corinne Jean-Pierre, but like who really is making these decisions? And the media lacks curiosity about that.
I mean, I remember when Senator John McCain was finished with a Tim Russert interview on Meet the Press one time. At the end of the interview, he said, you know, Senator John McCain, thanks so much for joining me. And Senator McCain said, thanks. It was like getting a prostate exam. I didn't enjoy it one bit. That's how it should be. Like that's how it should be every time. It shouldn't be fun. We are to hold you to account. So Democrats are terrified that Biden can't beat Trump. You have Democrats shouting behind closed doors that Biden needs to step aside to save the party, save their seats, ultimately save themselves from another humiliating defeat. So what is next? How are they going to pull this off? Senator Kennedy of Louisiana, I think, said it perfectly. Watch.
I think most Americans have made up their minds. I think they have concluded that President Biden is old, that he is likely suffering from some form of neurodegenerative disease, that he's suffered from it for a while, and that the White House and many members of the media industrial complex have covered it up. And that cover-up has been toxic. In my opinion, for what it's worth, politically, I think President Biden, politically, is as dead as fried chicken. He can quit.
But you...
He can be replaced. Let me just finish my thought. Or he can run and lose. You can't successfully run for president of the United States when your campaign slogan is, I'm only senile some of the time, as one commentator pointed out today.
I can't disagree with that. I mean, he's going to run or lose, step aside. There's no other choice.
Yeah.
So I think this may come down to the Democratic National Convention. I've been talking to some different sources about this and where this is unfolding. We're going to see, I think, over the next few days here, how this comes together, how they plan to put a Gavin Newsom in this spot or a Democratic governor in this spot. Could it be at the Democratic National Convention, or could it be some sort of a mini primary,
right,
which would allow them to move forward on this? I'm not sure. But I think, you know, as Tyler points out in our chat, why talk about the media as if they're not part of the government? Absolutely. So they've been handed their marching orders right now from the deep state,
which is abandon ship.
Abandon ship. Get him out of there. They need a new Democratic leader. Otherwise, donors are withholding their money. And this is a sinking ship for Democrats.
I just don't see. I mean, I would love to see a Gavin Newsom campaign and have them make the case. Look at California. Let's do that to the whole country. Who would vote for that, right? And I'm a native Californian, my whole family is like, oh, he ruined California. There's no way somebody would say, that's the template. Let's all do that.
Let's do that to America.
Yeah.
And that's what they're doing. That's why they love Gavin Newsom right now. Well, we've got more news to get to here on your Monday, July 8th. Sorry for screwing up the date at the beginning of the show. We were going to talk about the BRICS currency. We've been, of course, covering what is moving towards a replacement for the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency of the world. Well, BRICS just dropped a bombshell. We're going to talk about that coming up. Plus new October 7th revelations right out of the Israeli newspapers. Something, again, we've been covering for months here, but now the mainstream media is finally coming around to it. We'll cover that as well. But first...
First, we want to tell you about our show sponsor, Ramp, because if you're a business owner, then pay attention, because if you want a better way to simplify finance operations for your business expenses, vendor payments, and accounting, well, Ramp could be a game changer for your small or even a large business. Ramp is the corporate card and spend management software designed to help you save time and money and put money back in your pocket. Ramp's accounting software automatically collects receipts and categorizes your expenses in real time so you don't have to, because we've covered many times on this show how the new IRS director wants every business expense to have a matching receipt or else. And we know that the IRS means business right now. They are coming after small businesses more than large businesses. We know that for sure. So you have better have your ducks in a row. That's why you should consider Ramp. They save you money. Ramp has saved businesses an average of 5% for the first year. Plus, it's easy to use. Get started and issue virtual and physical cards and start making payments in less than 15 minutes, whether you have 5 employees or 5,000 employees. So right now, you can get $250 when you join Ramp by going to ramp.com/redacted. One more time, that's ramp.com/redacted. That's ramp.com/redacted. Cards are issued by Sutton Bank and Celtic Bank, members of the FDIC. Terms and conditions apply. Well, more bad news for the U.S. dollar as Russia lays out plans for an independent BRICS financial system. That means that more of the world's money will just go around the U.S. economy that is already limping, in pain, and insolvent. Now, why are they doing that? Because the U.S., we did it to ourselves. We sanctioned our way out of the game. Talk about shooting yourself in the foot. Now, over the weekend, speaking at the 12th World Peace Forum in Beijing, the Russian ambassador to China, Igor Morgulov, said this: "We are leaving the space dominated by the dollar and developing mechanisms and tools for a truly independent financial system. Its creation is not possible in the near future, but the steps taken in this direction are obvious." Now, he said that the countries that are game for this new system outside of the U.S. dollar are Brazil, Russia, obviously, India, China, South Africa, Ethiopia, Iran, and Egypt. We've also seen interest from other countries such as Argentina. Now, why would they do this? Well, because the U.S. has not been a neutral arbiter of international trade. On the contrary, we're a bully. Here's what Russian state media TASS says: that the U.S. uses sanctions and dollars as a weapon for political goals. That is true. The quote at the bottom, he says, "The United States and its allies use illegal unilateral sanctions as a tool of coercion against those like Russia who do not agree with the use of the dollar as a weapon to achieve political goals." Now, it's hard to argue against that. We, in fact, do this, even though it's against our better interest. Why? Well, recently, Representative Thomas Massie told Tucker Carlson that being the world's currency allows us to survive this incredibly high national debt that we run on this clock behind me at this very moment, right? Why can we operate with a national debt like that? Because of our privilege of being the world's currency. But we don't take that privilege very seriously. We weaponize it. And if we don't stop that, then we have to actually deal with this debt behind me. Here's how he explains it. Watch.
Right now, we're able to finance it because we're the world's reserve currency.
Right.
And when we print more money, which we're doing all the time, the Fed is doing that, we're actually taxing the world. Everybody in the world who holds dollars gets like a 3% transaction fee. I say we're kind of like the credit card at the gas station that gets 3% because you're using that credit card.
Right.
Well, we get 3% from inflation we cause because the world is using our currency. And we can do that as long as they use our currency. But I think it's going to end. At some point, they're going to quit using our dollars as reserve currency. I mean, I watched your interview with Putin, and one of the things, you know, whether you hate him or not, one of the things he said that is true is when we sanctioned him, before we sanctioned Russia, 70% of their transactions were in U.S. dollars. And after the sanctions, it's less than 20% of their transactions are in U.S. dollars. So what we're doing with all these sanctions, ironically, we're shooting ourselves in the foot every time we sanction a country and say you can't use our currency to have a transaction. We're taking away our ability to charge them 3% for that transaction, because when we print 3% more dollars, we're just taking that money.
And we're also sending a really clear signal, which is the dollar's not safe for you.
Right.
It's the reserve currency because it's a safe haven, because it's a stable country. It's the most stable country in the world. And we're not going to weaponize the dollar because that would be shooting ourselves. But suddenly we are.
And they'll tolerate like 3% because we're not backed by dollars. We're backed by aircraft carriers right now. So they'll sort of tolerate that 3%. But one of the things we recently did in Congress, we passed something called the Repo Act, where we said we're just going to seize all of Russia's sovereign assets in the United States. Well, it turns out a lot of that is treasury debt that they've agreed to buy so that they can hold dollars. And here's the problem with that. When people see that we've seized their money that they gave us in exchange for these treasury notes, then other countries won't want to buy our debt. It's already happening. And the price of a long-term bond that the treasury puts out will go, it's already gone above 4%. It's like over 4.5%. And they don't want to buy them anymore because, you know, we probably wouldn't seize Great Britain's assets, but I could see a seizing China's assets.
Why would, I mean, that seems like theft. Just like take a country's assets. I mean, that belongs to the people of the country, right? As such as Putin.
It is theft. Like, it's immoral. But even if you're okay with the amorality or immorality of it, it's short-sighted because eventually it'll catch up with us.
So do any of the dumbos you work with understand that? Did you say, wait a second, if we do this, first of all, it's wrong. And if we're going to be a beacon of light and order and justice in the world, we should abide by those principles. But even if you don't care about the, even if, as you said, you're right, amoral, like, it's self-defeating to do this. Do they understand that?
Some of them understand it, but it doesn't matter. They'll still vote for something like the Repo Act anyway, because it's popular.
Okay. So that popular bit, it really blows my mind, because that means that your elected representative thinks that you want them to bully other countries and hurt our own economy to be the hegemonic world power. Do you? If you don't, you should tell them. And in fact, look at the numbers. When Russia actually began the conflict in Ukraine, they had $650 billion worth of U.S. reserve. And the U.S. said, we don't care. We don't care if they hold that for us and it does well for us. We're playing politics. But Russia knew that the U.S. might do this prior to the war, so they started selling off dollars and stocking up on gold. Do you know that now they are the world's fifth largest holder of gold, worth about $140 billion. Well, that used to be us in the United States. Before World War II, we actually had 40% of the world's gold before we messed that up. Messed with a different word, if you know what I mean. And what do we have now? Air. We have a belief system. We don't even know how much gold we have. We have nothing.
We have debt. Yeah, that's how we operate. We don't even have air. We have debt. We have a negative version of air.
Right. So, again, we've gone over this story about the Fort Worth and the gold collection. It's really good. We'll do it another time if you want, because it's a crazy story that seems like it should be on Netflix, but it's real. So, again, the U.S. dollar became the world's currency. And, you know, there were warnings about this. All along, we chose to ignore them. When the U.S. became the dollar became the world currency, that happened in 1944 at the Bretton Woods Agreement. But in the 1960s, a Belgian-American economist named Robert Triffin warned about exactly what is happening. And I think it's worth reminding ourselves of what the Triffin dilemma is. This is from Carol Roth's most recent book, You Will Own Nothing. The Triffin dilemma, from Robert Triffin, acknowledges the challenges of the country that issues the world's reserve currency between balancing the interests of policy that benefit their domestic economy with the responsibility of keeping that currency as good as gold for the countries around the world that depend on its stability. So we've taken that good as gold and we pissed all over it. That's basically what we've done, because the world has to trust you if you are going to be the world's global reserve currency, and we don't care. So we cannot balance. You can't serve two masters. That's what the Triffin dilemma is. We've been warned about this now for almost 50 years and have done nothing about it. So this is exactly where we are. We are playing politics, and it is, in fact, shooting us in the foot. And instead of being the responsible banker, every single time we're hurting ourselves. That's why we have this terrible inflation. We are leaving ourselves out of global progress. And the rest of the world is saying, we're done with their games. We're going to work around them now. We've been warned. We're hurting ourselves. We're still doing it. So let us know what you think of that.
Coming up here on the show, we're going to be talking about what happened on October 7th. New revelations from Israeli's newspapers on exactly what happened on October 7th. Why now, 9 months later, are we getting the truth? Will the Benjamin Netanyahu government actually admit the truth or continue to spin more lies about that? We'll talk about that. Plus, the gender toolkit for liberals. If you're a liberal, if you're woke, if you're watching right now and you happen to be one of those woke liberals who's still kind of maybe still woke, still a liberal, and you're trying to think about how you can, like, learn about the world and learn about gender. And
well, how can we stop calling people who don't want sex changes for children bigots? How do we do that? Well, we look at the data. The people who have been trying to present this data all along who were called names, but now at least they've written it down. There's a new toolkit you can use and say, let's leave the name calling aside, put children's best interest first.
But first, we were just talking about gold, of course, and the importance of investing in precious metals. And silver specifically, I know we talk a lot about gold on this show, but silver is also fantastic, a fantastic investment. Natalie and I are big proponents of investing in silver. It doesn't get the news or the coverage, of course, that gold does. But many financial experts believe silver is the best kept secret in investing. It's an industrial metal. So, of course, it's in everything from cell phones to batteries to electronics, solar, electric cars, everything. So it's not only a currency, it's also a commodity in that way. AI, of course, is the all-new buzzword. Everyone's turning to AI right now, but it's consuming silver. It needs silver. So back in 2020, silver was in a surplus. Solar was a tiny source of the demand, and AI was non-existent. Now silver is in a deficit right now. Solar is huge. AI is taking over the world. In the words of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki, our friend of the show, he says, everyone can afford to own some silver because it's so cheap right now. And I agree with Robert, and our friends over at Lear Capital have some great information on silver. So if you're considering silver or you want to add some silver to your portfolio, maybe you've got some U.S. dollars, which are declining right now. The value of U.S. dollars continues to plummet. You may want to consider maybe transferring some of your U.S. dollars over to precious metals like silver or even gold. But our friends at Lear Capital, if you call their 800 number right now, 1-800-613-3557, just write that number down. You can call them when you're done with the show, or just go to their website. That's learredacted.com, and check out their silver shortage report. This is a great report so you understand the demand for silver around the world right now and why it's not only such a good currency. I mean, it's a commodity, but and a currency and a great place to invest. Natalie and I own a lot of silver, and it just moved above $30 an ounce. So very, very affordable. If it goes back to record highs, you will do very well, right? I think its all-time high is like $45, so significantly cheaper than gold, but very, very precious. Again, that number, 1-800-613-3557, or go to learredacted.com. Remember, there's no obligation to purchase, just free information. Check them out. Go to learredacted.com. Well, for months on this show, we've been reporting that Israeli civilians were killed on October 7th. The official line, of course, is that Hamas did it. And in some parts, of course, that was true. But in large part, that is not true. IDF forces were responsible for many of the civilian deaths on October 7th. That has been well established, but the Israeli line, the Israeli government, has refused to admit as much. And now, a new bombshell report from Haaretz, the Israeli newspaper, confirms what we've been reporting for months, which is, yes, the IDF soldiers were responsible for the deaths of many Israeli civilians. So the question is, why now? Why are we now just hearing about this from an official Israeli newspaper? Ex-CIA agent Larry Johnson has been covering this story on his great website, Sonar 21, and Larry joins us now. Larry, you've known, I think, right from the beginning that IDF forces were responsible for many of the civilian deaths on October 7th, but of course, there's been total silence about it.
Yeah, actually, Clayton, I think now with the facts that are out there, Israel is responsible for most, I would say over half. And look, it's real easy to do the investigation. Number one, names of all the Israelis who died, how many of those were at the Rey Festival and how many of those bodies were recovered from automobiles? Because the automobiles that were not destroyed by Hamas. Those were destroyed by the Israeli Air Force. You know, that's easy. We've already got testimony, and like the Haaretz article reports, that in one instance, there were 14 Israeli hostages in a house, and the Israeli local commander fired on that house, killed 13 of the 14, including babies. And so Israel was very quick to constructive that Hamas were, you know, they're raping women, they're beheading children, they're baking children in the ovens. You know, World War II Holocaust memes were complete lies, complete fabrications. You know, the reality is, whether the West wants to accept it or not, is Hamas conducted a professional military raid and very effective in attacking and killing Israeli soldiers and going after Israeli reservists, and also grab as many civilians and military personnel as they could to have bargaining leverage, because Israel's been grabbing people off the street and locking them up as well, with no trial, with no charges, nothing. Now, I'm not justifying that Hamas is correct in that, but certainly, you know, it's wrong. Hamas is wrong. You shouldn't be taking people hostage regardless. But that said, this is not the black and white, but Hamas is evil narrative that we're getting in the West.
And so, yeah, I mean, it is interesting, the timing of all of this. And you see also at the same time, massive protests. I mean, tens of thousands of Israelis taking to the streets, protesting the Netanyahu government. Of course, in the West, the Western media is not covering that story at all, that the Netanyahu government is in peril. So how is this sustainable for Benjamin Netanyahu? You have Israeli military officials, as you mentioned, saying that you can't defeat Hamas. They're an idea. There's not one particular organization. You can take it all down and it's done. It's completed. And then on the other hand, you have Netanyahu saying, yes, we can actually defeat Hamas, trying to hold on to power. As many Israeli watchers have said, he's literally just trying to hold on to power by using this type of rhetoric. So first of all, why do you think the Western media is ignoring all of the protests in Israel against Netanyahu? And second question, do you think it is sustainable for Netanyahu to remain in power?
Most of our prominent media companies are owned by people who have strong ties with the Israeli government. You know, an emotional tie, if you will. So they're definitely not going to do anything that they would be perceived as undermining who. But Netanyahu's, the pressures on him are growing, not because of what he's doing or not doing in Gaza. You know, it's not like Netanyahu's pushing a policy, hey, let's exterminate the Palestinians. Because actually, the Israeli electorate supports that. So we shouldn't confuse ourselves and think that Netanyahu is brutal, you know, murdering Palestinian women, children, men is something that most Israelis find abhorrent. You've got Netanyahu and his crew insisting now that they're also going to invade southern Lebanon. They're going to fight Hezbollah. And the military has been sending mixed signals. On the one hand, they started talking about going after Hezbollah. Because Hezbollah's effective use of rockets, mortars, and other weapon systems have driven out at least 80,000 Israelis from the northern territory. So they can't inhabit that. But then over the last month, we've seen a dramatic increase in Hezbollah attacks on Israeli installations and outposts in northern Israel. And so Israel keeps talking like, yeah, we're going to invade. You compare and contrast. We're all 9 months into this war in Gaza, and Israel has been unable to prevail. Israel is suffering significant casualties, and the Israeli military admits that they're tired and that they're lacking weapons. And yet, they're talking about, yeah, we're going to launch a new offensive into Lebanon against a military force minimum is probably 5 to 6 times the size of Hamas, and a military force that's an actual army. It's not a terrorist outfit. It's an army. They have a chain of command. They have uniforms. They've been trained. They've been in combat operations for at least the last 10 years fighting against ISIS up in Syria. And they are extremely well armed, better armed than they was in '6 when they bloodied Israel's nose when they came into southern Lebanon back then. And so Hezbollah is well positioned. You know, they're tan, rusted, and ready, so to speak. And so Israel's caught in this, the rhetoric says, but their actual capabilities to carry out that rhetoric is a whole different ballgame. So, you know, Netanyahu keeps trying to keep up this facade that they're going to be able to pull it off. I think it's going to be really interesting is he's scheduled to come here on July 24th. Remains to be seen if Joe Biden will still be in office on July 24th. Right. And what will it mean? What will it mean for Netanyahu showing up next to the guy? It looks like he's the, you know, the new character from Weekend at Bernie's, you know, the dead guy who's pretending to be alive.
Well, but President Biden over the weekend in that interview with the ABC's George Stephanopoulos admitted that he had just gotten off the phone with Netanyahu, that he talks to him regularly. What's your sense of what they could be talking about? Sending more weapons? Some sort of a post-Gaza plan for setting up the oil pier there? Like, what are the phone calls like, do you think, right now between President Biden, who's sitting there reading cue cards, and Netanyahu?
Well, one, I'm wanting to, if I'm Netanyahu, I'm asking, making sure that Biden's not getting soft to cut the legs out from under the Israeli negotiating position with both the Egyptians and the Qataris. I'm taking the lead in the negotiations, mediators with for the Palestinians. Second, trying to ascertain that if we do go into some bit of trouble, what kind of support can we count on from the United States? Because I guarantee you, if Israel goes into, they're going to be facing a military defeat, and that kind of defeat is the kind that could actually jeopardize the survival of Israel. So I do think that Netanyahu's trying to line up in advance to make sure that they're not going to cross a bridge and then find out that bridge is burned. There's no way to get back across the river.
Absolutely. Well, my guest has been ex-CIA agent Larry Johnson. Great to see you, my friend, as always. And I apologize in advance for some of the little technical difficulties here as we're still working out some of the bugs, but we appreciate it. Larry, great to see you as always. Thanks so much for joining us.
Great to see you, Clayton, and welcome back.
All right. Thank you so much, Larry. Really appreciate it. All right, we got more news coming up here on the show today. We're going to talk about the October 7th revelations as it unfolds later on. We're going to take a closer look at the Haaretz piece coming up a little bit later this week in the newsletter and in the show. So our thanks to Larry for joining us on that. We're also going to be covering the gender toolkit for liberals, which this is an unbelievable toolkit. Like if you're somebody who wants to say, wait a second, we don't want sex change operations for children, mm-hmm. and you're hanging out in like a woke liberal enclave, and you're like, you know what, I don't think that that's right, but I don't know how to talk to my liberal friends.
Right.
Now there's a toolkit that you can use
to
figure that out.
Well, there long since has been something called data, but at least now liberal parents have put together a toolkit so that they can discuss this without calling themselves, oh, I don't know, bigots or whatever it is that they, you know, conversion therapist, Christian far right, Christian fundamentals. We're going to get past all of that and take a look at this toolkit. It's fascinating. But first, we want to tell you about our friends over at American Financing, because you work hard to support yourself and your family, obviously, but it may seem as though you're taking a step back every month instead of moving forward with these shocking prices that just don't let up. Well, when the bills are higher than what you bring in every month, you have to swipe that credit card to cover the difference, and the debt just keeps adding up. But if you own a home, my friends, then maybe American Financing can help you break free from that cycle. They are saving people just like you an average of $854 a month. Think about what you could do with that. Every month, an extra $800, and not have to worry about those minimum monthly payments. And even better, it costs nothing to find out how much you can save. All it takes is for you to take the time to learn something that maybe can help your finances. Take a quick call to American Financing and you may start saving today, maybe even delaying two mortgage payments, which can help you get ahead. So call them and start your journey towards being credit card free. That's 866-890-8434. That's 866-890-8434 today, or go to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. Transgender children seems like a political issue when it really should not be. The data does not show that sex change surgeries or dangerous medicine or social transition helps at all with gender dysphoria. In fact, there is a lot of data showing that it does harm children, period. So why is this presented as such a divisive issue, liberal versus conservative, when really it shouldn't be? Well, a new guidebook was developed by liberal Democrat parents to show one another that social transition can be harmful to kids. It's called An Urgent Conversation, What to Know About Children, Gender, and School Policy. One of the guide's creators, Natalia Marokver, founder of the nonprofit Restore Childhood, joins us today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
So your guidebook shows how the federal government is pushing parents to transition children as sort of a kindness or a progressive policy. No one, of course, wants to be bigoted or closed-minded. So is that why you wrote this, in order to say, like, hey, this is not politics, it's children we're talking about? Can you explain your motivation?
Sure. So we formed, Restore Childhood formed during the COVID mandates, and we really wanted to look at the evidence behind many of the mitigations that children were subjected to. And we organized something called Urgency of Normal, which was written by a virologist out on the Bay, on the East Bay, on the Bay, San Francisco area, about what the evidence looked like for masking and vaccine mandates and social distancing in schools versus the mental health pandemic. And we really believed at the time, which we still do, if parents had access to data and to things presented simply rather than politicization, children would be able to go free, you know, sooner. And in fact, that toolkit was very helpful to parents. Parents had reached out to us and said, you know, we saw statistics here, there, we saw reports on the left, the right, mainstream media, et cetera, but nobody had collected it in one place where we could actually use it, bring it to like policymakers or principals or school boards and actually enact changes for our children. Same here. This issue has become so politicized. There are many activists on both sides of the spectrum. We wanted to look at what the science, what the data said. And, you know, just a few months ago, the CAST review just came out in the UK where they looked, where a very respected pediatrician looked at the studies on transgender health and found that the science really wasn't saying that this was the answer for children and that suicide was more, was always about more than just one thing. So all the fear-mongering that parents, especially in this country, have been subjected to for the last, you know, few years, we really wanted to kind of shrink it down and say, here's what the science says, here's what you can do, here's how you can talk to your children.
Right, because if you are someone who wants to be compassionate and you want to be accepting, you think, oh, okay, we should give trans children anything they want. We should let them, you know, change their bodies. Or why has that become a co-opted part of the conversation where if you don't believe in those things, you are called names like a bigot or extreme right winger?
That's a great question. You know, I was one of the open schools parents here in New York City. I'm still a registered liberal Democrat, and I was at one of the very first rallies to reopen schools. And I cannot tell you how shocking it was to suddenly be called white supremacists and racists for wanting to reopen schools. We were called Trumpers, right wingers, racist white supremacists. It didn't matter, you know, what our constituency looked like, what our political affiliations were. It just became weaponized. So I don't really understand. I think this is a really dangerous tactic and it needs to stop.
Right. And so what you present here, I think, is really interesting. You talk about how this is not actually a partisan issue. You have charts here showing that most people agree that you should not medically transition children or put children on puberty blockers or allow children to have surgery that changes their bodies. Only over close to 80% of people agree on that. And so talk to us about how important it is to start with our commonalities.
Well, I think that the toolkit is really meant to bridge that divide, right? I mean, we need to understand what each of the terms means. We made sure to include a glossary. I think that these words are scary and they're charged and they're weaponized. So I think that's the first step, is to start speaking the same language and accept that most people are really in the middle. Having conversations at the playground with other parents, engaging your child's teacher or your administrator, even in the bluest of blue areas, is not something you can't do. Like, I think that there's been an incredible chilling of speech in this country and actually internationally as well. So I think we need to kind of take it back and realize that in real life, when we have real conversations, we can make real progress and come to real solutions, because most people do care about children. It's in this, you know, stratosphere online where it seems like it's, you know, it's up in the air.
Right. Now, something that you point out here, this was new to me, that some say that the psychological intervention is iatronic, meaning the invention creates the condition. Now, this was something that early on people were canceled for saying, that it is a self-fulfilling prophecy or that there was an element of social contagion. So explain this word, if you will, iatronic, and what it, how we're actually see it play out. for children in schools?
I think it's iatrogenic.
Iatrogenic. My apologies. Yep.
No, okay. Not at all. Abigail Breyer. No, it's new to me too. And I actually love it. I feel like I use it so often now. And I think what it means is that the cure kind of, you know, is worse than the original disease. Like it can create the condition. Abigail Schreier talks about it in her book, Bad Therapy. She has like a whole chapter on this. And I think it's about, you know, the social contagion phenomenon, like embedding ideas in children's and adults' heads that were never even there. When you start questioning things that, you know, that you kind of thought were your bedrock, like I'm a girl, I'm a boy. Well, what were you, you know, what are you really? I remember, I mean, I think this was really interesting. I have a friend who whose son went to a very progressive middle school, and he came home, he was in sixth grade. This was a couple of years ago during the school, you know, just reopenings. And he said to his mom, you know, they're talking about a lot of things in school and they say, I'm not really a boy or a girl. Maybe I'm a car. And she was just like, oh my God. Like, I remember right. reading that, you know, in a chat, and I was like, how are we creating these ideas? Like, we're these young, impressionable minds, you know? I mean, if a boy wants to, you know, dress like a girl or put on nail polish, what's the big deal? That's not, you know, an irreversible damage. Like, you can take off a dress, you can take off nail polish, you can, you know, cut your hair if it's long, but these harms are irreversible. And I think that's what we're talking about here.
Right. And my opinion is that that's more bigoted, to tell a boy that if he wants to wear nail polish or a dress, he must not be a boy. Well, that is bigoted towards the very idea of a boy, because why cannot social performance involve nail polish for a boy? What's so wrong with that? Something that I really like here, you talk about FERPA and parental rights, and you talk about how activists have co-opted these rights to say, well, the rights really are with the children and not the parents. But you say that's not true. So tell me exactly how that has happened and what are parents' rights?
Well, parents have the right to protect their children's privacy, but now that's being weaponized by schools keeping secrets from parents. And on some level, like some of the administrators who don't even agree with this kind of activation and this division between parents and children, because they know it also makes their lives more difficult, will not have a choice if, you know, if there's legislation and school laws that prohibit them from sharing, you know, whether it's their child's pronouns or whatever. So parents need to read the FERPA laws. They need to understand what their rights are. They are the guardians, and they need to be able to approach their schools and their administrators and explain to them, walk them through it, and explain to them and assert that they have the, you know, the rights for their children.
So this is a free download, this kit. And again, it's not necessarily for parents, because you say that gender dysphoria is highly related to parents who are dealing with other mental issue comorbidities, but it's a lot for conversations within school districts, within communities, right? Is that more your intention here, or maybe it is for everybody?
I think it is for everybody. I think that, you know, there are the parents who are aware that this is a problem and are struggling to find data to support what they believe, you know, is the right course of action, which is not to immediately affirm and transition children. So that for them, this is that resource. Then there are the parents, and I think this is the bigger struggle, is how to access this audience. But there are the parents who don't understand or don't know how things have changed. I call it, you know, the parents who don't realize, like, the food system has changed, and they're like, I drank milk. Why do we need to do organic for little kids now? It's like, right. Well, milk, yeah. 30 years ago was a little different than it is now. The school situation and the way that, you know, your kids are being constantly probed with questionnaires and social emotional learning, that's changed too. So for those parents, it's kind of like a wake up call, like, hey guys, this has changed. You should pay attention. You should discuss this with your kids, and then bring it to your administrator, bring it to your pediatrician. Pediatricians often don't know, right? So, I've spoken to a pediatrician who said in 30 years of practice, she never had one child who transitioned, and in the last year, she had six. So, yeah. You know, we can't expect pediatricians to be experts in everything. This is something they can look at, and then they can investigate and advise their patients correctly.
Right. Well, again, it's a free download. You can find it at gendertoolkit.com, and I hope you do. I hope it provides a lot of great conversations around well-intentioned parents, which I think most of us are, without the political capture. So thank you so much for coming on Redacted. I hope you come on another time and tell us about this important work. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
So nice. Thank you.
That's going to do it today for Redacted. Thank you so much for joining us. It's great to be back. Amazing to be in a new studio. We appreciate you joining us and staying through the show. Hey, let us know what you think of the new look, the new digs coming back in the summer. Feels really good. So again, subscribe to the newsletter. You're going to get notices about when we're off and when we're back. It's redacted.inc. It's not just that, though. It's more. It's news. It's snippets, it's jokes, it's all the things you've come to expect from Redacted. So thank you so much for joining us. We will see you tomorrow right here. And as you can tell, I'm pretty stoked about it. So see you then. Bye, everyone.